We will call the joint hearing of the House and Senate Education Finance Committee to order, and I would like to welcome everyone here. Welcome Senator Wieger and senators here as part of this joint meeting to hear about the governor's proposed budget. And I hope this is one of several meetings that we have with the Senate as we work together with the Senate in moving the state forward and looking at ways to increase student performance and close the achievement gap. So welcome all. And Senator Wieger, if you have a few words.
Thank you very much, Chair Markart, and we appreciate the spirit of bicameral cooperation. We look forward to getting to the finish line. And over the next 100 days, we will join as a team to put together the best bill that will hopefully get us to the goal of sustaining school funding. And to do that, we need to stabilize and strengthen school funding. So that is our mission. There will be a lot of discussion as we get there, and as maybe 10 of us then put together that ultimate package, it will move us ahead. So thank you for the opportunity, and look forward to getting to know all of you better.
Thank you, Senator. And since this is our first joint meeting, I would like to go around the table here and just state your name and where you're from so we could have some quick introductions. I'm State Representative Paul Marquardt from Dilworth, Clay County area.
I'm State Representative Kelby Woodard from Southern Scott County and Western Le Sueur County.
State Representative Jerry Newton, Coon Rapids, Blaine, and Spring Lake Park.
Representative Connie Bernardi, Fridley, New Brighton, and Spring Lake Park. Representative Yvonne Seltzer, Southern Minnetonka and Northern Eden Prairie.
Representative Joe Radinovich, representing Crowing and Aiken counties.
Representative Kathy Briner at the Mankato area.
Representative Pam Myra, Savage and Burnsville.
Representative Jerry Hurtas, 33A, which is Western Hennepin County, Wayzata, Minnetrista, St. Bonnie, all the way up to Greenfield, Corcoran, the one-third of Western Hennepin.
Representative Dwayne Quam, I live in Byron and serve Dodge in Olmsted County.
State Representative Sandra Erickson, representing Mille Lacs County, Sherburne County, Kennebec County, cities like Princeton, Onamia, Isle, Ogilvie.
Representative Glenn Grunhagen, representing McLeod and Sibley County.
Senator, we'll start with you on this side.
Chuck Wieger, State Senate. I reside in Maplewood.
Alice Johnson from Spring Lake Park, Blaine, Coon Rapids area.
Leroy Stump from the northwest corner of the state.
Tom Saxug, Bemidji, Grand Rapids, and everything in between.
Terry Bonoff, Northern Minnetonka, Woodland, and most of Plymouth.
Senator Gary Dames, Senate District 16. I reside in Redwood Falls, and I represent Brown County, Redwood County, Lyon County, Yellow Medicine, Lacapar, and part of Renville County.
John Hoffman, Coon Rapids, Champlin, and Brooklyn Park.
Representative Will Morgan, Burnsville and Lakeville.
Welcome.
Senator Susan Kent, Woodbury, Landfall, and the southern parts of Maplewood and Oakdale.
Melissa Wickland, and I represent parts of Bloomington and Richfield.
Vicki Jensen, I live in Owatonna, and I represent counties of Steele, Rice, Dodge, and Waseca.
And thank you very much. Since you rural members mentioned all of your rural, we'll come back, all of your rural counties. I also represent parts of Becker County, Detroit Lakes, and all of Norman County also. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Representative Jim Dabney. Parts for all of six neighborhoods in South Minneapolis. You guys can talk counties. I'll talk neighborhoods.
Anna Wills, representing 57B, and it's the northern part of Apple Valley, Rosemont, and Coates in Dakota County.
Thank you very much. At this time, if I could ask Commissioner Salius and Dr. Melcher to come forward. You should have some handouts in front of you. Yesterday, as you know, Governor Dayton proposed his budget. What we are, as a committee today, we're going to look at the education finance portion of that budget. And I would ask members to use this meeting as a meeting to be able to ask questions, to drill down, if you will, on the proposals. Yesterday, there was kind of an overview that went out to the public and so forth. So today is the opportunity for this committee to really look at what's behind all the numbers and what might be behind all of the changes. Also, members, we will, as time goes on in both the House and the Senate, be hearing bills and or several bills. where we're going to have a lot more time to talk about policy and so forth. So I asked members today to really limit their input to questions that they might have. I'm also going to ask Commissioner and Dr. Melcher to kind of cover an area, and then when you're done with an area, kind of make a pause, and at that point we can ask questions. So we'll kind of let them cover an area, and then members ask questions. Raise your hand. Senator Wieger and I will be keeping track of things, and we will go back and forth. So we'll have House members, Senate members back and forth, and keep it as equal as possible. So, Commissioner Casalius, it's an honor to have you here today. Thank you, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Chairman, and Chairman Wieger as well, and members. This is really an exciting opportunity, and I want to thank all of you for being here today. Yesterday, the governor laid out a bold, forward-thinking vision for Minnesota, one that is fair and balanced, and one that ensures Minnesota is put on a strong foundation, one that puts children first, focuses on getting every Minnesotan a job, and delivers better government for the people of Minnesota. Yesterday, the governor predicted that some might say we can't afford to invest these kinds of dollars in education. And then he went on to say, but I don't think we can afford not to. Investing in our children is investing in all of us. It is not only the morally right thing to do, it is economically in our personal and collective best interests as Minnesotans. In this budget, we see reflected the faces of children who need a great first start. Faces of children who are new to our country and need more time to learn English. Faces of children who need more services for their special ed and have those services fully funded as promised. And faces of children who have yet to achieve their highest potential. The faces of children who will grow to lead us into the next generations to come and make this Minnesota a great place to live, the one that we knew and grew up with. In this budget, you will see support for teachers to help them build their toolkits and meet the unique needs that children bring to their classrooms every day and share what works with each other and built on best practices through our regional centers. And finally, in the budget, you will see smarter investments based on results and student needs so that we can ensure every single child has what they need to be successful, and every single teacher has what they need to be successful with children. And then we think we can achieve the goals of having every single child ready for kindergarten, every child reading well at third grade, every child crossing the finish line to graduation ready and on time, and every child able to afford and see college in their future and a career and a job so that they can have a successful, prosperous life. And finally, that we address the nagging, persistent achievement gaps in our state that put us at the bottom of the nation, and that we are able to fully come good on our promise as Minnesotans to have a uniform system of public schools for all children. The governor said that this would be the first word, but not the last. And yesterday he shared with members his quest to work with all of you and have your ideas reflected as well in this budget. So we're here today to set forward a bold vision, but to also hear your ideas and answer your questions and work on behalf of the people of Minnesota. I want to recognize and thank Dr. Tom Melcher, who has dedicated his entire life to our children and to this state through public service. He is an amazing professional, and his wisdom is unmatched across this state. He has, for the past 18 years, worked with me and the people of Minnesota, as well as key educational stakeholders, to look at budget recommendations that we think have been thoroughly vetted, and many of those recommendations you will see reflected in this budget. I also want to thank our Ed Finance Chairs, Tom Nelson and Peggy Ingeson, who also served on both budget working groups, as well as the many key stakeholders, education leaders, and teachers who served on these committees. And then my staff, Rose Hermanson, Kevin McHenry, and Char Briner, who led and worked with Tom to ensure that we were looking at all of the different parts of the budget so that we could be sure that what we presented to you was sound, thorough, and fully vetted. And I think you will see that from testimony throughout this session. Finally, I want to thank MMB, Jim Showalter and his staff, and the EBOs who worked with us from the finance side to be sure that what we were doing also matched what other agencies were doing in investments, as well as looking at the overall budget of the governor and his tax reform package and how it all worked together so that we were not raising property taxes, but in fact were investing in those items that we think most Minnesotans believe are items that will move the achievement needle forward. So today we're here to present a short PowerPoint of those recommendations to go a little bit deeper, take your ideas and questions, and we'll do that now. And how we'll do it is, I'll take the easy ones, Tom will take the hard ones. That's what the governor always says, right? But I'll go ahead and go through and we'll do little chunks of the presentation and then ask for questions, if that works for you, Mr. Chairs.
That would be very good, Commissioner. And also, if I could ask Commissioner and Dr. Melcher, that when you're talking about changes, if you could include what was the governor's rationale for the change, and also if that change came from one of the task force, like the, if you could say, well, this was included, just to give us a little better perspective of things.
We'll be sure to do that.
Thank you.
So the governor's overall vision was that we get all kids ready to learn, that we get kids ready for post-secondary, and that they're ready for career. And we wanted to create a P20 alignment, and so we worked very closely with Director Pogemiller, Chancellor Rosenstone, and we had a chance to present some of those ideas on alignment to the House Committee last week. And we're very excited about this overall collaboration in education to create a whole package from pre through 20, ensuring that kids are surely cradle to career. And so overall, you'll see an investment of about $640 million that the governor is recommending in the overall P20 system from preschool through higher ed. And the first is the K-12 investments here of $344 million approximately investing in pre-K-12. Funding year 14, it averages about $72 increase. Funding 15, $339 student average increase. Of course, when you see the runs, those are different among schools, school districts, because of the different needs, specifically special ed, integration revenue, and other revenues like that based on student needs, poverty. $44 million additional in early childhood scholarships, and $40 million for all-day kindergarten. Investing in Minnesota students, we have $10 million for teachers. As I said in my opening comments, we are looking at a budget that supports teachers as well as supports students. $8.9 million for English language learners to move from 5 years to 7 years. Research shows that it takes longer for some students to acquire the language, and as we raise rigor in our standards, it's absolutely essential that students get help with content as well. $4.5 million for regional centers. This is our sharing of the best practice. As many of you know, we moved to a new accountability model, and we are recognizing reward schools. Those are the schools that are showing high levels of proficiency in their students. They're closing achievement gaps, and they're getting their kids growing much faster, and we want to learn from them. And we don't believe that school districts, you know, in rural Minnesota can afford the transportation to continually come to St. Paul. We want to bring it to them in their schools, in their space, and do ongoing support for schools to share those best practices across hallways and across schools and across districts. $1 million for school bullying prevention. As you know, we had a school bully task force that was meeting, and we have recommendations that we will be bringing forward and have been brought forward to the governor, and this is to help districts to design those prevention programs, design policies, and to create data systems that are in those recommendations. So the appropriations go from about $15.2 billion in the biennium, in the current biennium, to about $15.5 billion in the biennium, which is about a 2.3% increase. Appropriations in funding year 16-17 look a little bit different because the governor's placement here of paying back the school shift. So you see an overall payment of the school shift and a 4.1% increase from 15.7 to 16.3 billion.
Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Melcher.
Just to amplify this a little bit, the governor's recommendations for the next biennium would include $647 million in ongoing funding, and then the one-time payback of both the property tax shift and the state aid payment shift, which is $1.2 billion.
Again, just a highlight summary of some of the change items, and you have more detail that we'll be giving later. The general ed formula in 14-15 is about $118 million, $40 million to optional all-day K, $124 million for special education funding to fill the cross subsidy, $44 million for early learning scholarships, $10 million for teacher growth and evaluation, and $8.9 million to do the increase in ELL. There are some other smaller change items as well that sum up to a savings. Within the general education funding formula, we increased the basic formula by $52. Again, in 2011, we increased by $50. We also increased in 2012 by an additional $50. That's $100, and this would add another $52, making it $152 added to the per pupil funding formula. We extend the funding eligibility for ELL, and we clarify kindergarten early entrance requirements for students who are starting before age 5.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out that the recommendation on extending funding for English learners was a recommendation from the School Finance Working Group.
Do you want to take the next slide?
Sure. The next slide, Mr. Chairman and members, reviews the general education funding formula changes for fiscal year 15. So the governor's recommended a 1% increase in the general education formula for 2014. In 2015, the general education formula would stay at the same level as in 2014, but it would be restructured according to the recommendations of the School Finance Working Group to simplify the formula calculations, make them more clear and transparent. And that includes first simplifying the pupil unit weights. Currently we have a large number of those weights, and they get pretty confusing, and the newer approach would be to have a weight of 1.0 for students in grades 1 through 6, 0.55 for kindergarten, and 1.2 for students in grades 7 through 12. That's roughly where the weights are now, but this is a much simpler, more straightforward system. The recommendation would also be to eliminate marginal cost pupil units, which are extra pupil units that districts count that have declining enrollment, and instead to establish a separate decline revenue that would be a more transparent way of funding enrollment decline. This also was a recommendation coming out of the working group and had previously been a component of the Minnesota Miracle Bill that Representative Greiling authored a number of years ago. Under this provision, school districts that have declining enrollment would receive declining enrollment aid equal to 28% of the formula allowance multiplied by the decline in the adjusted pupil units from the previous year. The restructuring of the formula in 2015 would also include elimination of the aid reduction for pension contribution rate changes with a positive hold harmless adjustment for districts with a below average reduction. Going back to 1997, we have had a subtraction that comes off of the general education aid that is paid to school districts. So they receive the formula amount minus an adjustment for a pension rate change that occurred back in 1997. We're many years removed from 1997 at this point, and it really doesn't make sense to continue to adjust current funding levels based on what the savings were to school districts from a pension rate adjustment that occurred in 1997. Again, this is a recommendation coming from the working group that creates a simplification of the school finance system and also uses current data rather than data from back in 1997. The governor is also recommending that gifted and talented revenue, $12 per student, be rolled into the basic general education formula. This also was a recommendation coming from the working group, and the background was to provide additional flexibility to local school boards.
Overall, the budget working group was looking at providing more flexibility to school districts and more autonomy around the use of their funding, and so you see this in overall philosophy for the budget working group and local control. The next couple of slides are a lot with the budget working group, so I'll allow Tom to take those, but if you want to stop, Mr. Chair, and ask any questions or clarifications at this point, that
very, very good. I know we have one. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Commissioner Casilius and Director Melcher. Okay, thank you for that English correction. my comment is in regard to the gifted and talented program, and I just want to compliment you, is my initial thought, and the governor for rolling that into the basic education formula. And the reason for that is I have a strong conviction that of giving the flexibility to the local district, but also that all children have gifts, talents, and abilities. I've been a longtime critic of the gifted. I was 16 years on the school board. I don't know if you know that. Some of these people already do, but I thought I'd inform you. And I continually, it continually grated me that we would send the message to students and parents that a small percentage of the children had gifts and talents, and by default, the rest of them don't. And that is such a disservice at best, a travesty at worst. And let me just add this, and again, this is a compliment to you, okay? If you study the great inventors and people of accomplishment historically, in world history, really, but in America in particular, and I'll just mention too, Louis Pasteur, the father of modern medicine, discovered the germ theory of spreading diseases. I read an autobiography on him. He was a very slow, methodical learner. He was thought to be rather dumb initially, okay? But yet he went on to found modern medicine. Albert Einstein was told at one point in his life that he was unteachable, okay, by a teacher because, you know, of his display. So what happens is when we categorize children at a young age, we send a false message to them. And so I just encourage you to send a message to our school district, okay, and I think this does a little bit of that. All children have gifts, talents, and abilities. They demonstrate them at different ages, not always at the same age, just like they grow at different rates.
Representative Grunhagen, do you have a question?
Well, it was a compliment.
Okay, I appreciate that. We're going to try to... We've got a limited
I understand.
Time, and I think you've made the point very, very well.
It's a passionate issue for me.
I understand. So I'm just trying to keep this to questions, but thank you. Anything sure. Further? Representative Grunhagen, you want to just
I'll
finish?
Have three more questions down the road.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Commissioner and Dr. Melcher. Question with regard to the waiting on kindergarten students. I'm curious what the thinking was to give them 0.55 when you've expressed your commitment to all-day K, and then it says in parentheses, unless they're all-day. So can you explain how the waiting works with regard to kindergartners and why you didn't just give them the 1.0 as long as you're wanting to fund all-day K?
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonoff, the pupil waiting changes that are being proposed are a simplified version of the current waiting system. Currently, we wait kindergartners at a 0.612 wait, and we wait first graders at a 1.115, and students in grades 4 through 6 at 1.06. So the 0.55 that's being proposed is the same ratio of kindergarten to first grade that we have currently, but by having a 1.0 for first graders, then the formula allowance becomes the actual amount of money that first graders are generating, and we have the same ratio for kindergarten. Now, in the governor's recommendations, and we'll get to the specific recommendation on all-day K a little later, the governor is recommending that a weight of 0.7 be used if the child is enrolled in an all-day K program, or a weight of 0.55 would be used if the student is enrolled in a halftime program. So it's an optional all-day K funding system, and that provides an incentive of about $900 per student enrolled in an all-day K program. It does not fully fund all-day kindergarten. To go to a weight of 1.0 for all-day kindergarten, it would take more resources. We currently have 54% of all of our kindergartners in a free all-day K program, and that's been growing at about 3% a year. So, you know, it was 49% last year. This year it's 54%. Under the governor's recommendations, we expect that most school boards will choose to do all-day K, and that we will be up to about 85% of our students in all-day K in 2015, and probably 90% in 2016, maybe 95% in 2017. Some school districts will need a little time to do that. There are staffing issues that are involved. There are issues of facilities in some cases. So the governor's approach was to make this an optional thing for school districts, and we simply didn't have the resources to get all the way to 1.0 in this budget, so we're providing a sizable incentive that we think will move school districts more quickly to adopt all-day, every-day K.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Melcher, I appreciate that, and I actually prefer optional as well. I'd love to see our optional dollars be allowed to be used for either 3- and 4-year-olds or kindergartens, but either way, I do appreciate the direction. It just seems to me that the current weighting of kindergarten versus first graders has to do with half day versus all day and the actual costs associated with that. So for those that do participate in all day, it just to me seemed to make more sense to give them the same weighting as those who are in all day. But again, I appreciate that the math didn't come out that way. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly on the gifted and talented commissioner, I know that I understand the rationale for flexibility and local control, but could you just speak briefly to the remaining responsibility to assure high achievement in our high-end learners, which was one of the initial reasons for establishing gifted and talented funding in the first place?
Yes. Commissioner Casalius.
Chairman and Representative Breinert, we absolutely value gifted and talented as well as students who have needs. We want to be able to address all student needs, high-achieving students as well as students who need additional support, and the students in the middle, which you see with our 11 to 14 redesign. So we still expect that school districts will work with all different unique needs that children bring to their school environment.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Dr. Melcher, Commissioner. The $52 in incremental funding, does that include the $12 of gifted and talented that's being rolled in, or is that truly $52 in new money?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pratt, the $52 increase is truly $52 in new money, and that happens in 2014. The roll-in of the gifted and talented would occur in 2015. as part of the restructuring of the education funding formulas. And I have the next slide actually goes through the mechanics of how that works.
Thank you. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thought about whether or not I would ask this question, but Commissioner Casillas, I think you have a very high standard for this budget, so I'm going to ask it. You said every single child will have what they need. That's a pretty high bar. And so I'm going to ask, I noticed that in this biennium, we're not repaying the shift, which was part of House File 1, the number one priority of the DFL caucus in the House. Is that a gimmick, or is that a tool in the toolbox when we shift?
Commissioner Casillas.
Chairman and Representative Witter, I think that Commissioner Showalter has talked about the shift and how that was implemented by previous legislatures. It is unfortunate that we have to use the shift in times of economic stress, and it has been used by previous legislatures. And the governor is committed to paying that off in the next biennium and has that placeholder in there to be able to do that. It's not a gimmick, but it is actually, he has it in there as a plan to pay that off.
Okay, and
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it is not a gimmick when we do a school shift. That's I appreciate that. The second part is this cross-subsidy on special ed. I know that's an area that members of both caucuses have really spent a lot of time asking questions about. I believe that we've in the past in this committee talked about that being about a $1.3 billion cross-subsidy that ends up happening on special ed. And you've got, I think the governor's budget has $124 million in additional spending. Is that meeting the needs of our cross-subsidy? Is that meeting the need of every child?
Well, I think Dr. Tom Melcher can speak directly to what our full funding would be for the state. We are short in revenues to fully cover the cross-subsidy. However, whatever is on a child's IEP, the districts do have to provide those services. And so what happens is you have about an average of about $600 per student across the state of a cross-subsidy. That comes off the top of the general ed funding formula and actually becomes a shortage of an overall general ed budget. But those students with disabilities have every single piece of their IEP covered by services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, we do have an additional slide that talks about special ed a little later
okay,
on.
Thank you.
Yep. Further fill it in.
I think we're ready to continue.
Mr. Chairman, if we could go to the next slide. This goes through the math on the general education formula for 2015 that's being recommended by the governor. The governor is recommending a formula allowance of $5,700 per student in 2015, and that's equivalent to the $5,276 that he's recommending for 2014. So what this does is it walks you through that math. The $5,276 is the proposal for 2014, which does include the $52 increase from the prior year. However, school districts don't really get the full $5,276 because we have this pension adjustment which comes off the top based on the 1997 data, and that on the average takes $32 away from school districts currently. And then we have the separate funding for gifted and talented. So all of that nets out to school districts actually getting about $5,256 on the formula. When we adjust for the simpler pupil units, the new pupil units would be about 92% of the old pupil units. So it would take a formula allowance of $5,720 to deliver the same amount of money to school districts. But under the governor's recommendations, there would be a slight positive adjustment for pension adjustment, which would provide $8 per pupil on the average to school districts. There would also be the separate decline revenue. And so the $5,700 per pupil ends up being the same identical funding level in fiscal year 2015 as we had in 2014. And then the governor is recommending that the new money for education in 2015 be on the special education formula, which indirectly benefits the general education program. The restructuring of education funding in 2015, and again this comes from the working group report, would include a change in the calculation of operating referendum levies to use adjusted pupil units or students served rather than resident marginal cost pupil units. So So the new referendum allowance for school districts would equal the current referendum revenue after alternative attendance adjustments divided by the new pupil unit. So there would be no change in revenue for school districts under this. It would simply be a more transparent way of identifying how much referendum revenue each school district actually gets per student that they serve. The equalizing factors that we use to adjust and pay a portion of referendums in the form of state aid would be adjusted to maintain the neutrality of the funding, and school districts would be guaranteed that they would get at least the same amount of referendum aid as they currently receive, including the alternative attendance adjustments that they receive for open enrolled students. The governor also, as part of this restructuring and also part of the recommendations from the Education Finance Working Group, would simplify the school equity formula and target it more fairly to districts that have low referendum revenue per student. The principle of the equity formula is to try to narrow the gap between high spending districts and low spending districts. And we've had this formula in place for many years, and over time it's become very complicated with four different formulas and a lot of very complex calculations. In this new simpler formula, there would be a sliding scale. The revenue per student would be $100 times the greater of zero, or $2,000, minus the referendum allowance. So in other words, a school district with no referendum would receive $100 of equity revenue. A school district with a $1,000 referendum would get $50 of equity revenue, and a school district with a $2,000 referendum would not get this sliding scale portion of equity revenue. Then there would be additional equity revenue of $56 per pupil, and this would be applied uniformly to all school districts. Currently, we exclude school districts that do not have a referendum from equity revenue, which seems inequitable. We also exclude Minneapolis and St. Paul from a portion of the equity revenue, and we have a kind of an arbitrary adjustment for metropolitan versus rural. We get rid of all of that, and we have a much simpler, more equitable equity revenue formula.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Dr. Melcher, could you align or compare the equity revenue recommendation that the governor has to that of the Ed Finance Work Group?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wieger, this recommendation is similar to the Education Finance Working Group. The difference is that the Education Finance Working Group recommended that $56 per student that's part of this proposal be rolled into the general education formula, and then that $56 be financed with the uniform general education levy. So this leaves a little bit more money in the equity formula than what the working group recommended, because they also were recommending a larger general education formula with a uniform levy.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Melcher, on page 11, can you re-explain why the new referendum aid cited in point C is guaranteed to at least equal old referendum aid, including the alternative attendance adjustment?
Remember that slide 11.
Slide 11.
Yeah. Yes. How do you rectify that guarantee, or how do you justify that?
Dr. Melcher.
Chairman and Representative Erickson, the goal here was to minimize any change in property taxes or in state aid as a result of the restructuring, and because we would now be using adjusted pupil units rather than resident pupil units to calculate referendums, that does create some movement in the numbers.
Yes.
We do adjust for that on an average basis by adjusting the equalizing factors that we have and the allowances per student. But at the end of the day, there was some movement where some school districts were going to get more referendum aid and others were going to get less referendum aid. And one of the strong messages that we got from the governor's office was that they wanted us to absolutely minimize any changes in state aid or property tax levies coming out of the education bill. And so this was included as part of the recommendations here. The next set of recommendations are on slide 13, and these deal with the basic skills revenue. The governor is recommending that basic skills revenue be allocated based on student need to provide increased flexibility for local school districts to close the achievement gap. And this is also coming from the working group recommendations. The first one here is to roll the extended time revenue into compensatory revenue, which would increase the current compensatory allocations by about 15%. So currently, school districts receive additional funding for extended time programs, students that are served before school, after school, during the summer. That can either be for students that are falling behind, and that's where most of the funding is. There's also a piece that relates to learning year programs where you're attempting to accelerate student learning and have students graduate in less than 12 years. Under the recommendations, that would roll into the compensatory revenue, and it would be left to the discretion of local school boards as to whether the school boards believe that the best option for those students is to provide the extended time programs or to provide more intensive services during the school day. So this was consistent with the philosophy of the working group, that they wanted to see more local control, more local flexibility on how to use those dollars to close the achievement gap. Consistent with that, the working group also recommended, and the governor agreed, that there should be more flexibility in the use of compensatory education dollars. Currently, we require school districts to spend 95% of their compensatory dollars at the site that generated the revenue. The governor recommends that be increased to a 15% flexibility level, and the bottom line is that the schools that have the highest concentration of poverty are not always the schools that have the biggest achievement gaps, and this provides a little bit more flexibility to the school boards to target some of those compensatory dollars to the schools that have the largest achievement gaps, and it gives the school districts a little more flexibility to work to close achievement gap. The governor also is making no change in the compensatory pilot program that applies to some of the larger school districts in the metropolitan area. Those school districts continue to have the complete flexibility on how they allocate compensatory revenue among buildings and also the additional resources that are provided in that program.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Melcher, will this change have an effect on alternative learning centers?
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, yes. Currently, the alternative learning centers are receiving money in part through allocations of the regular general education revenue. The law requires that school districts allocate at least 90% of the money that is generated by students goes to those centers, and the governor is not recommending to change that. So they will still get at least 90% of the money generated by those students. But they also receive these extended time revenues.
Right.
And under this proposal, those extended time revenues would instead be allocated based on student poverty counts. And there would still be some allocation of the general education revenue between the resident district and the area learning centers based on the time that the student spends in the two centers. So if you're spending 1,000 hours in your regular school and 200 hours, mm-hmm. we're still going to prorate that revenue, and the school district would still be required to allocate the money based on time. But there would be some changes at the margin. It's not as dramatic, I don't think, as some people think, but there would be some changes at the margin in terms of the actual resources available.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll no doubt have a chance to talk more in depth about all of these issues, but the flexibility in terms of the additional 15% that can be used here, are we going to be using the MMR measurements to be able to guide school districts in terms of, or is that just totally up to school districts to figure out where they would retarget those resources?
Commissioner?
Chairman and Representative Mariani, the idea here is that school districts and school boards understand and know their kids best, They are becoming more and more familiar with the MMR, which is our new accountability measure for some of the new members here, and the multiple measurement rating system. I would suspect that school districts will appreciate and superintendents will appreciate having this flexibility to be able to best move those dollars to where they're needed most, and that the communities will hold them accountable to make those decisions.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, and again, I won't belabor this, but I think that one of the things that would provide, I think, the legislature more comfort relative to any changes in the use of the of our K-12 appropriations, and I suspect that the commissioner and the governor agrees with this, is that we have to have clear indications of success in the application of those appropriations. And when we're changing the formula around is a real ideal time in which to have that conversation and to figure out better measurements of outcomes, you know, tied to those adjustments at that time.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, the restructuring in 2015 would also include changes in the Safe Schools revenue. The Safe Schools levy would become a component of general education revenue. The school district levy would become a $32 per pupil levy rather than a $30 levy. That's really the same money. It's due to the change in the pupil unit weightings. What's really new here and changing is that charter schools would now have access to the $32 per pupil. Currently, charter schools do not have access to that because it's a categorical levy. So this would make the $32 per pupil uniformly available to all schools within the state of Minnesota. And the special levy for school districts that are members of an intermediate district would continue, and the allowance would be changed from $10 to $11, again, just to adjust for the change in pupil weightings. It's the same money that they currently get. One last piece of the restructuring.
Senator Johnson has a question.
In the Safe School funding, Mr. Chair and Dr. Malchin, sorry about that. Are you planning to expand the way schools can use that money? Have you done any discussion on that, and is that coming forward?
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Johnson, in the K-12 area, there has not been discussion about changing the ways that school districts can use Safe Schools money. There is currently a large amount of flexibility to school districts, but we're open to looking at other options.
Commissioner Casilius.
Mr. Chair, Senator, part of the budget working group recommendations and our overall philosophy, again, was to give greater flexibility. You won't see that reflected here because we were going to roll the Safe Schools portion into the general education program. So, but right here it's still kept out separate in these recommendations.
Mr. Senator Chair Johnson. And Commissioner and Dr. Melcher, I think with the, you know, focus on school safety right now, yeah. It begs us to talk about it, find out what we're doing.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, one last portion of the restructuring or the change in the general education program in 2015, and that is to create a teacher growth and evaluation aid. We do have new requirements for teacher evaluation, and the governor's recommending that we provide new money of $22 per student enrolled on October 1st of the prior year to school districts that are not participating in the QCOMP program for supportive teacher growth and evaluation systems. There are a number of other kind of miscellaneous changes in the general education restructuring package. For example, the operating capital allowance is increased to from $73 for equipment and $100 for facilities, and $30 for year-round pupil units to $79 for equipment and $108 for facilities. These are to adjust for the change in the pupil unit weightings. It's the same money in the operating capital program that we currently have. There would also be a change in the small schools formula. Again, same bottom line money as we currently have, but adjusting for the pupil unit weights. The transition revenue in the general education program would be adjusted to guarantee that every school district receives at least as much revenue under the governor's proposal as under current law. And there would be an adjustment to alternative facilities aid that would minimize impact of general education formula simplification on property taxes.
Senator Stump, you had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just was referring or wanted to refer to slide 15, which deals with the teacher evaluation. Is the department going to seek any increases in the QCOMP appropriation? And I realize that there is a slight surplus, I think, in that account right now. But what is the goal of the department in terms of the QCOMP program?
Commissioner Casilius?
Chairman, Senator Stump. QCOMP funds about $150 million in the biennium, and that was originally put in place for teacher evaluation and teacher growth within school districts. We have about 137 districts now participating in QCOMP, and we have now funded teacher evaluation, or not funded it yet, but we have passed laws around teacher evaluation, and we have not yet funded that. This is an attempt in the governor to provide those school districts that do not receive the $260 per student funding for QCOMP and teacher evaluation $22 to begin to start to fund teacher evaluation. The department is not seeking any additional funding for QCOMP at this time, and we are seeing that more and more districts are moving to QCOMP, but there is a $75 million cap on QCOMP per year of the biennium.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Commissioner, could you give us some direction as to what the department's overall goal would be? Is it to move away from QCOMP and move to more of a general assessment teacher evaluation type program for all districts, or is it to expand? Obviously this year you're not looking at expanding, but in the long run, what would be the goal of the department?
Commissioner?
Chairman and Senator Stump, I think that this is a topic of discussion for legislators and our community, and we did not bring this up in our budget task forces as we discussed it. It would create quite a number of winners and losers in the overall balance. And so what we were trying to do and what we think we ought to do is have a robust discussion about what we want around teacher quality and how we want to support our teachers. And so I think that we should open that up for discussion. I think $150 million is quite a large amount of money, and that we should look at the results of that program and also fund teacher evaluation equitably across the state.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a summary on that. It seems like this is an issue that has been a kind of a urban-rural divide on that who participates in the QCOMP program. And I look personally at the evaluation as something that's general across the whole state. All school districts are going to have to participate. So I think it's something that all members of the legislature are interested in, especially if you're from the rural areas, that most of our school districts don't participate in QCOMP. And it's a $260 difference that we do not, most rural districts do not receive. And even beyond that, most of us couldn't even participate if we wanted to, because small districts just don't have the resources to operate in the same fashion that large districts do. So I think it's some area that we really do need a discussion around this year, because with all the changes that we're talking about and the future evaluations, I think it's a good time to make those adjustments and either phase them in or phase them out.
We'll take one more question here and move on. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I'm curious why the governor's budget doesn't address at all the inequity in funding throughout the state. My district of Wright County, the superintendent sent me down with a clear mission to try to help stabilize the funding for our district for rural Minnesota. There's a huge gap, as you know. It's kind of the white elephant in the room. Everybody talks about it, the left, the right, the in-betweens, and seems nothing's going to be done about it. And I'm just curious why the governor hasn't addressed that issue more fully to equalize the funding for rural Minnesota.
Commissioner Casilius.
Chairman and...
McDonald.
Senator, representative.
Just a representative.
Representative McDonald. Getting to know all the new faces and very appreciative of your question. It is a very critical question that we have debated for the past 18 months in our working group. And the governor also really thought hard on it, and it really was a question of revenues. As many of you know, we had the recommendation for a general uniform levy and the budget recommendations, as well as a referendum roll-in, some regional aspects. QComp wasn't taken in effect, but Senator Stumpf, we do see more rural districts now opting for QComp because they see that they have to do the demands of the teacher evaluation. So more rural districts are opting for it now, but the money's going to dry up. So it is really a revenue issue, being able to do those things, and so we just didn't have the revenue in the budget to, at this time. And hopefully we'll be able to address it in future years.
Follow-up? Yes, you bet. Thank you,
Chairman.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Commissioner. It is a revenue problem, indeed, and we've been working on it longer than 18 months. I think many in this room have been working on it for 18 years or so. It's a long time. We really need to address this, and I think now is imperative. Now is the time to take action, and there's a lot of money spent on new education, millions and millions of dollars, and yet nothing addresses that inequity in funding. It's truly unfair to the school kids in my district and any other district that doesn't receive, that has almost a $7,000 gap. That is unfair, unequitable, and it needs to be addressed, and I'm really, it's a shame that it's not addressed this year. I thought really we could have accomplished it this year with the governor being heralded as a education governor. So I hope that you will take some of our work in mind, the committees here, the Senate and the House. This is our almost a number one priority, and yet it's ignored. It's disappointing.
Chairman.
Commissioner Casalia.
And Representative McDonald. Absolutely, the governor has said that this is the first word, not the last word, and we're looking for great ideas on how we can address these problems together and create a system for so every single child achieves. So any new ideas, we're glad to entertain those.
I'll bring it to you.
Thank okay.
you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd like to move back to slide 18 now, which is the one that works through the optional all-day kindergarten proposal. This would increase the pupil unit weight from 0.55 to 0.7 for students enrolled in a free all-day everyday kindergarten program available to all kindergarten students at the student school. That would increase the basic revenue by $855 for each student enrolled in all-day everyday kindergarten. And then with the other programs that are also tied to pupil units, that would be another $53. So overall, this would represent an incentive of $908 per student for school districts to provide all-day everyday kindergarten. For those school districts, the 54% of kids that are already in those programs, they would generate that money automatically. Senator Bonhoff, that could be used for early childhood education. But for those districts that do not have all-day everyday kindergarten, here's an incentive of $908 per student to provide that all-day everyday kindergarten program. We believe that with this incentive in place that the percentage of students in all-day everyday K will increase from the current 54% up to 85% by 2015, 90% in 2016, and 95% in 2017. There's also an assumption here that when school districts implement all-day everyday K, that there will be an increase in the average daily membership for students with disabilities who are in kindergarten, And the funding for those students is based on the number of actual hours that they participate. So this budget includes additional dollars to cover those extra hours for those students who would be going to school longer because their peers are going to school longer. In the area of special education.
Dr. Melcher, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Melcher, we have various ways of implementing kindergarten, whether it's all day or half day, and some parents pay for it, others it's provided. If we increase but not have the total amount, would school districts still be able to have a prorated charge for those parents that can afford it under this proposal?
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wieger, under this proposal, the extra pupil weight would only be allocated if the district provides a free all-day, every-day K program. If a school district provides a half-day kindergarten program and then provides a community education, a fee-based community education program for the remainder of the school day, this extra pupil weighting would not apply. But certainly there could be room for other options. For example, if a district decided they wanted to go to a four-day-a-week rather than a five-day-a-week kindergarten program, I'm sure that the governor's office would be happy to work with legislature on other kinds of options in this area.
But, Senator, it's also school-based. So if you have multiple schools, it could be at one school and not the entire, it's not district-based.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, the next slide deals with special education funding. The governor's recommending a major investment in special education funding, increasing special education funding by $124.8 million in fiscal year 2015. That would reduce the average cross-subsidy by $180 per student, from $645 to $465. In other words, school districts are required to provide special education services. We don't think that this will have a dramatic impact on the amount of special education services that are provided. We believe that school districts are currently providing special education students with a free appropriate public education. But what happens currently is that school districts pay those mandated costs of special education, and then they have to take the difference out of their general education formula dollars. So right now, when we pay a school district $5,224 per pupil, on the average, the first thing they do is take $645 right off the top, and that reduces the availability of programs in the general education program. So by providing an additional investment in special education, what we are doing is making more dollars available in the general education program by buying down that cross-subsidy. The governor also recommends that the special education formula be modified so that it's based partly on student counts and partly on an improved excess cost formula. Currently, the special education formula includes funding for salaries but not for fringe benefits. We know that fringe benefits are a sizable portion of the cost of special education. They would be included under this new formula. The governor also recommends that the serving school district or charter school be required to cover 10% of the unreimbursed special education costs, and that the resident district be responsible for 90% of the unreimbursed special education costs. Currently, the state requires the resident district to pick up 100% of the unreimbursed costs, which does not create a strong incentive for efficient program operations in the serving district or charter school. So this would add some incentive for efficiency in the provision of special education services. This special education proposal came to the department from the working group. So this is based on the working group recommendations, although the working group had recommended a little higher investment in the special education area than the dollars that are put in here.
We have a couple questions at this point. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try not to drill too deep this time, okay? this is a question in regards to special ed. You know, having been on the school board, I got entwined or ensnared in several special ed, I don't know which, but in several special ed situations. And they're very depressing at times. But the point is this. I have long thought and discussed with other educational people the idea of a scholarship option for parents who are not satisfied with what the school district is doing for their special ed child, so that they could seek services outside the school district, either on a part-time or full-time basis, whatever worked out, and hire the people to meet the need of their child on an individual basis, rather than just in the school setting. Now, they'd actually get a reduced amount of money if they decided to accept this scholarship. So you'd reduce the amount that they would have available. There's two reasons for that. One, we have a wealth of experience and expertise in retired teachers in this state that is just in many cases sitting around idly that could be utilized to help these students in a more cost-efficient and effective basis. The other reason is, having been involved with special ed situations, I realize parents have at some times unrealistic demands and requests on the school district that cannot possibly be fulfilled within the budget. So the current situation creates an adversarial situation between parents with special needs children and the rest of the educational student body and meeting their needs with the programs and stuff. So often, I think a lot of parents would choose the scholarship, take reduced funding, and seek the services their child needs on an individual basis and quit blaming the school for everything that goes wrong with them. Is there any way, and I know this would probably take a federal waiver, but is there any way that you would look into that option and even on a pilot basis try it out, reducing costs, creating efficiency, and meeting the needs of that special ed student in a better way than what's currently being done, which I personally believe is a cookie-cutter approach to special ed students.
Commissioner Casilius.
Chairman Marquardt and Representative Grunhagen. Currently, the way that special ed students receive services is by their individual education plans.
Yep.
And when services are written into those plans, then the school district is obligated to purchase those. I would suspect that if there were special tutoring or special equipment or other necessary services needed to meet the needs of that particular student, that those could be written into an individual student's IEP.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Real quickly. Yeah, but to me, allowing the parent to take an option of reduced amount of money in a scholarship for and seeking the services they believe necessary for their child would save money and eliminate the adversarial situation that's currently created with our special ed program. So I just encourage you to seriously consider that option as a way of reducing costs and reducing the adversarial component that's in the that's part of the special ed program with the rest of the student body. I think it would also, again, we have a wealth of retired educators, a wealth with expertise and experience. A parent with that scholarship could hire those in, and maybe the child doesn't need to be in the school district all the time. Maybe he needs to be in a different setting, an individualized setting. I have a nephew who's special needs. All he has is problems in that school district, discipline and other things. He really needs more individualized instruction, but the parent doesn't have that option. So consider that seriously, and if you want to work with me on it, I'd on a bipartisan basis, I just appreciate it.
Members, Senator Johnson, Representative Mariani, Representative Woodard, Representative Bernardi, Representative Quam, Representative Hertas on the list. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to pick a senator to even this off, and then I'm going to ask Commissioner and Dr. Melcher to finish things off, and then we will take questions. Also, we will go until 5 to 10. We can have the room to 5 to 10. I hear that the Senate goes 2.5 hours a meeting. My word. We can get things done in an hour and a half on this side. But anyway, so we'll compromise. We'll go 10 minutes over the rest. So we can have this room till about 5 to, but we'll take a question from Senator Johnson, then we'll make sure we finish things up, and then we'll head down the list if that's okay with members. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner and Dr. Melcher, I had the opportunity to have a brief conversation with the governor after yesterday's meeting, and I asked him if I found something that would reduce costs for school districts, could I spend it? And he said, gave me his home phone number and said, call me, we'll talk. I'm taking that as yes. So I'm wondering if there are situations like that, that I'm serious about it, that we know of programs that would reduce costs for school districts that are in place right now. This teacher approached me about her child who needed some extra therapy. They wanted to put him in special ed. She said, no, he doesn't belong in special ed. He needs some therapy for his eyes, and that would help to reduce costs immensely. Again, I'm just proposing it and letting you know that the governor told me that he would be open to that discussion. Thank you. Thank
you. Very good. All right. If I could ask you to then go through the rest of your presentation, and then we'll open up the questions. If you want to be added to the list, we'll catch you at that point, too. So please,
Mr. Chairman and members, we're going to continue on slide 20 with the discussion of integration revenue. As you know, the 2011 legislation repealed the existing integration revenue formula, but it established a placeholder for a new integration formula to be created. We did have a task force that looked at integration issues. There was no action taken during the last legislative session to address it. The governor is recommending that in 2014 that there be a new formula for integration revenue, that it would still fund the districts that are eligible under the current integration rule, and the funding would be allocated based on the concentration of students of color in districts, and also on local progress in closing the achievement gap. So this is working with some of the ideas that came out of the task force and also ideas that came out of the finance working group, and then adding a piece in that tries to tie this to closing the achievement gap. And so the revenue under this program would be the greater of 90% of the integration revenue from 2013. So we're putting a floor in. No one receives a reduction less than more than 10% of what they were receiving, or $315 times the pupil units times the percentage of students of color plus $100 times the pupil units times the percent students of color times the focus rating. And the focus rating is a component of the new MMR system that is related to how effectively school districts are closing the achievement gap for students of color. So there have been a number of issues raised with integration going back to the legislative audit in 2005, and we think that this recommendation takes us forward in terms of adjusting integration revenue to more accurately reflect the demographics of school districts, but also provides some adjustment for the progress that school districts are making in terms of closing achievement gaps. Now, the levy for integration revenue was frozen by the 2011 legislature at the 2013 level. And then, so the proposal here would be that for 2014, the aid would be the difference between the revenue under this new formula and the levy that school districts already made last fall. So for that 1 year, that would be the calculation. Now, in 2015, the integration levy is sunset. That is no longer part of the current school finance system because the 2011 legislature extended the levy for 1 year, but they did not take action in 2012, and so the integration levy sunset after fiscal year 14 and is not part of the current law budget. And so what the governor is recommending for 2015 is that we use the formula that was established in 2014, and that the aid portion of that formula would continue, but that there would not be an integration levy after 2014. The governor also is making some recommendations for changes in literacy aid. The current literacy aid formula focuses on third grade reading, which is very important. But the governor believes that there should be a more balanced approach that looks not only at reading in the elementary school, but how well we're doing in the high schools. And so it adds a component to the literacy aid formula to look at how well the district is doing in terms of high school graduation rate. So under the proposal from the governor, we'd have the same money in the formula that we currently have, and about two-thirds of that money would be allocated based on growth in reading between third grade and fourth grade. The other one-third of the money would be allocated based on the school district's high school graduation rate compared to the graduation rate we would predict for that high school based on the demographics of that school district and the state average graduation rate for students with that particular demographic.
Mr. Chair, can I just make one comment on that real quick?
Commissioner Castelius.
One other piece of this is really looking at three pots of money here. One is the basic uniform, turn the lights on, pay the teachers. The next one is where you see student needs and the adjustments with special ed, integration, compensatory, those dollars that go out based on trying to remove barriers so that students can learn. And this pot of money really is a pot of money about rewarding and recognizing excellence. And this is about making sure this is the results-oriented pot of money that matches what we hope to incent schools around third grade reading, around graduation rates, getting kids ready, the goals that I set out at the beginning.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the next slide,
Mr.
slide
Chair.
23, gives you a summary of the impact of the governor's recommendations in 2015, summarized to the regional or type of school district level. Overall, there is a $339 per pupil increase on the average, which is a 3% increase over the current law base. The funding for Minneapolis and St. Paul school districts would go up by 3%. The funding for inner ring suburbs on the average would go up by about 3.5%. The reason why that goes up a little higher than the percentage increase for the state as a whole is that there is some reallocation of integration revenue to inner ring suburbs that have witnessed a dramatic increase in the percentage of students of color in recent years, and the current integration formula does not account for that, and also because those school districts tend to have relatively high special education costs because of the types of students that they serve. Outer ring suburbs would receive slightly less on the average, 2.9%, and that again is primarily tied to this integration piece where those tend to be students with relatively low students of color, and when we look at the allocating integration revenue more in relation to demographics, there's a little bit less dollars there. In the rural parts of the state, the increase also on the average is in that 3% range, and for charter schools the average is 3%. So there was an attempt here to balance off the funding increases provided by type of district, urban, suburban, rural, charter school. When you do look at the individual runs, you will see much larger range in terms of revenue provided, and that has to do with individual demographic differences, concentration of special education students, concentration of students of color, and so forth. When it comes to property taxes, the governor's budget for K-12 education has a very slight decrease in property taxes, $4.8 million. There was a conscious effort here to try to minimize any impact of the changes that were being proposed on property taxation. The property tax is essentially flat across all of the state. There are some school districts that do have some increases in property taxes, and the school districts that have a significant increase in property taxes under this proposal tend to be school districts that have been excluded from the equity revenue in the past because they did not have a referendum levy, and this provides some additional equity revenue to the school district, and the local school board would then need to decide if they wanted to access that local equity revenue. So that
would not be a property tax increase if they chose not to.
Right. Now, the next area is early childhood scholarships, and I'm going to turn this over to the commissioner to walk through that.
Commissioner.
Thank you. As you know, from the past 2 years, the governor has spent quite an amount of time talking about early childhood, and we are hoping to be able to increase our early childhood scholarships to about 11,000 new scholarships serving young children with needs, as well as continue to link that to high quality, improve the supports to transition to kindergarten, and help sustain learning through the early years. We also have the increases in all-day K, as you know, so it's get the great start and continue the great start and all-day K to catch those who maybe don't participate and we can't catch for preschool. An additional $22 million is proposed here to increase the access to early childhood scholarships. Second is the Regional Centers of Excellence. This is what I prefaced earlier in my introductory comments, expanding our centers from 3 to about 8 or 9, depending on funding. Currently, there are 3 centers federally funded to support our priority and focus schools, where teachers are given supports around building those toolkits I talked about and sharing those best practices. You know, from the medical profession, if a doctor, a heart doctor, finds a cure to preventing a heart attack and a new valve is invented, everybody swarms to try to learn what that is. Well, I tend to believe that we're saving lives and educating our children every day, and that teachers have to have the time and ability to share their profession with one another. So, school climate centers. This is a recommendation being brought forth by the bully task force for us to be able to establish standards for prevention of bullying, establish policies and support school districts in the establishment of those policies, as well as disseminate best practices and secure data center around school bullying. And this may change in terms of the policies that will be brought forward to the legislature this year. Other agency initiatives that we are proposing throughout the governor's cabinet that impact education, I just want to mention. Department of Public Safety will also have a school safety center, which used to be federally funded, but that those dollars ended, and because of the recent tragedies in Newtown, as well as Minnesota wanting to be sure that every single school has good security measures to prevent this type of incident in our schools, there's $1.6 million being proposed in the biennium that the Department of Public Safety will be appropriated, and we will work with them in partnership, assuming that proposal goes through the legislature. Department of Human Services has several proposals, as you know. We work very closely with them in the Children's Cabinet, but more specifically with education, our partnership is an increase in scholarships, about $20 million to add to our $44 million commitment and proposal. And that would simplify the current rate structure, provide more incentives for providers and curriculum resources and the such, and then also working with teen parents and mental health services. DHS also is planning on an expansion of school-linked grants, about $7 million, with the mental health services for children with complex high-cost conditions. Through increased funding to our grant program, our mental health grant program. And then through our housing division, rental assistance for our highly mobile kids to be able to help provide their ability to stay within that same school so that they can have stability throughout the school year and not have their academic year interrupted just because of mobility. So at this time, that ends our proposal explanation, and we'll be able to take any questions that you might have with the remainder of the time.
Thank you very much. We've got 7 on the list for 12 minutes. That's 1.7 minutes, about 1 minute and 42 seconds apiece. We should be able to get this done. Representative Mariani, you're first.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm impressed with the with your mass prowess. That's quite impressive. First of all, thank you. I just want to kudos to both chairs to bring the two committees together to review the budget together. I think it's awfully important for both houses to
start off with that tone of good cooperation.
And also kudos to you, Commissioner, for a powerful frame here. I had several questions, but I'm not going to belabor them because we're going to have opportunities during the course of the next several weeks. I will highlight a couple things, though. You know, one is on the special ed adjustment. Very good move. Obviously, is going to help our schools tremendously. I've been around long enough, however, to know that we bought these cross subsidies down before, and they keep creeping up. And I think part of what we have to have is a good discussion about what's driving that behavior and to what extent we even have any power to control that. But I suspect that the modified formula is one attempt on the part of the executive branch to get at some of those drivers. And so look forward to hearing more about how that works. Obviously, the integration aid is something I've spent a lot of time on and carried a bill last year, which was an unusually strongly bipartisan bill, which unfortunately never even got to first base. And so I'm hoping that, and that's not on the executive branch, that's really on us. I'm hoping that this year we have the vision and the courage to be able to address that issue head on. I'm obviously concerned about the local levy, going forward, and so I want to, but I do understand that that takes place within the bigger context of what you're trying to do with levies here. Obviously, I'm going to need some strong convincing on that. I just simply want to, reinform or affirm the frame that the commissioner laid out here, members, where there's an attempt here. A strong attempt to look at our appropriations, which are massive in the state, in a kind of much more strategic way, if you will, so that we're looking at, I'm going to borrow your metaphors, the sort of turning on the lights, a component here, which obviously would be the biggest chunk, but going beyond that to be much more clear about the rest of the appropriations is those that are increasingly targeted at removing barriers. And I really like the third component, which I think is where this legislature will be should be moving aggressively forward in the future when we come to discussions about new appropriations, new revenues, as we sell this to the public, as we gain their trust that we're investing well, that we're going to increasingly make decisions based on results practices. So I think just a powerful, terrific frame. I look forward to working with you to be able to actualize this into state law this year.
Senator Bonnet.
Thank you. I did have questions on the integration revenue, but I'm going to hold off on that because I would hope that in our committees that we would really get to practice with, going through how it really affects us district by district and get examples because it's pretty complicated. I'm going to skip that. I appreciate the breadth of approach you took, including the DHS, mental health issues, the safe schools, all that is very much welcome. But what I would ask is, I didn't see anything about the home visiting that we did establish in the last session, and wondering if there is a continuation of that and any commitment to that within the overall early childhood budget.
Commissioner?
Chairman, Senator, I think that we should open up that discussion and continue to talk about that. I know that there is some home visiting items at Ellinger's health budget as well. So if we can look at our comprehensive package for children.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner, there's always been that struggle with home visiting health versus education oriented. And so I continue to distinguish the importance of the early literacy aspect of home visiting. Thank you.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I too have lots of questions, but I'm going to narrow mine down to one, and I would echo what Representative Mariani said. It's always good to be with the lower body in a joint session like this, so we appreciate the Senate being here. On the School Climate Center, just very quickly, I think I heard you say that part of that School Climate Center would include a secure data center, and if that's true, could you kind of walk me through briefly on what data would be in a secure data center in a School Climate Center?
Yes, Commissioner? Chairman, Representative Woodard, in the recommendations, they recommend that there's a data center to look at school bullying incidents, the number of incidents, and they charge the department with designing that and developing a task force to design that. So we don't have that designed. We do collect some of those incidents now, but it would be out-of-school incidents, like out-of-school suspension incidents that we're aware of at the department currently.
Representative Witter.
And Mr. Chair, just last follow-up to that then. So would that include student-specific data that the Secure Data Center would be housing?
Commissioner Salias?
Chairman, we don't have that designed yet, and so we would have to design what that would look like in the future. And that would come out of the policies that would come through that bill.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Melcher, probably the best person to provide information on this. You talked about the transition revenue. As many people know, legislators believe that school districts get an increase when they see a growth in students in poverty in their district, and important funds to target to help those students. The last time transition revenue was done, I don't know if you recall this, there was a glitch in the system, and it wiped out any increases that school districts would have realized because of their increase in poverty. And so they have gone without those realizing those increases because they had large growth that year. Has that been corrected in this transition revenue? And I would like to work with the governor's office to make those districts whole who did not receive the funds and realize the increases in funds for their students in poverty that year. It may show up in the compensatory numbers, but you wiped out the actual increase.
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bernardi, we did not do any separate adjustment going back to 2003, but as we've designed this transition calculation in this proposal, we're looking at current law revenue versus the proposed formulas for the same year. So we're not going to wipe out any increases associated with growth of poverty between the prior year and the current year. It's compared to old law current year versus new law current year rather than last year versus this year. And I think maybe we'd want to look and see how those districts that might have been affected by this would do under this proposal and whether there's any need to go back and do a retroactive change.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Yeah, and thank you, Dr. Melcher.
Representative Plum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I did like the 10% change in the special ed. However, I don't like the change in the levy of where if that student is not enrolled in your district, but lives in your district, you pay for 90%, but the levy, you no longer can get a levy for that student. And then the back on the issue of disparity, the five lowest per pupil funded districts, of which I am a resident in one and I have a neighboring one, they receive 35% less than the average increase, so that disparity is increasing in funding from the highest to the lowest. And I'd like to, instead of just adding everything to a general formula, that all these programs would set separate and that they would be evaluated every 3 to 5 years for their effectiveness, so that the general funding for education actually is more equitable, and then anything special is looked at as special, as separate, and evaluated for its effectiveness, because a lot of the dollars that go into this some larger funded districts per pupil are in programs that have been around for decades, and the kids in the schools now are not seeing the achievement gap decrease, they're not seeing the graduation rate improve. And I think we need to really look at all of the programs that get rolled in and make sure that we are seeing that they are doing their duty to our students. If they're not, take those funds and move them to something else that might be effective. But I'm just a little bit disappointed that it's sort of as usual when we do this formula.
Representative Hertoff.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Regarding your comments on the duration of the committee meetings, I'd just like to remind you that senators serve 4-year terms and we have half the time to get things done.
duly noted in the minutes there, Representative.
I have two quick comments. I believe that with the comprehensive changes that are being proposed to education funding. I share Representative McDonald's comments. This is the time to deal with the equity disparity between AMSD schools and C schools. And I think that whatever we get done here ought to include a component of addressing that issue. I think 18 years has been too long to deal with that. The second quick comment regarding special education. Prior to taking oath of office, I had several meetings with area school superintendents, and I have another one scheduled this Friday with about 10 or 11 districts that serve 33. And special education is of concern with regard to the situation where parents will choose to sue or litigate over the services that they demand. And with respect to Representative Grunhagen's comments about being able to opt out and take a scholarship or a certain portion of money and you know, get the service you need, I think that ought to be something we need to discuss, because some of our second suburban ring school districts are engaged in $100,000 to $150,000 lawsuits in trying to defend their position about what they can or cannot provide. And this may not seem like a big deal to a Anoka or Osseo school district that has a $200+ million budget. But when you're talking about a C school that has a $20 million budget, what you have are school boards and school superintendents who simply cave into the demands because they know that these costs will exceed maybe what cost of providing the service is. The issue really is unbudgeted services that suddenly a parent demands to have done, and we need to figure out some type of reform to deal with that issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we do have a few other members, but unfortunately we will not get to those questions. Members, thank you for your questions and your comments today.
Thank you.
Commissioner Casilius, Dr. Melcher, thank you so much for your testimony and work. And before we go, Senator Wieger has a couple announcements, but thank you so much. And I know we're going to have some future joint meetings coming up also.
Well, yes. Thank you, Representative Marquardt and members of the House Committee. And on behalf of my colleagues in the Senate, we appreciate the very positive start to the session, and we look forward to future joint meetings. Particularly, we're looking at doing something on the special education with the upcoming auditor report, as well for integration revenue. And for other subjects, if you'd like to share those, but we have a mission that we share over the next 100 days, and we are One Minnesota. So those things we will work on together. And for our committee, we're meeting tomorrow morning, 8:30 sharp, and the agenda's posted. And we've asked for all the groups wanting to provide testimony to give us a one-page summary, and we like bullet points, that we will then make available to everyone, and we will take you in the order that we receive them. So thanks again.
Thank you very much. And members, we'll meet in our normal room 10. This joint meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.